This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The Score Midday Show.
Make it sexy.
This is, I think, the most pivotal week when you consider their April schedule. As we do the progress check of the Cubs at this point, you have to ask the question, are they a little better than maybe we had thought before?
This is a measuring stick series and a measuring stick week. And they really need to win this series. You want the offense, first of all, to keep clicking, to keep getting on base, to keep creating opportunities and take advantage of situations.
Here comes the 1-2 pitch. Swinging a high fly ball deep left field. Back goes Conforto. It's got a chance. Gone. There's a liner into center field. There's a base hit. And a run comes in to score. Cubs lead 4-0. There's a deep drive to left. This could go. And it is gone. A 2-run homer. Swinging a high fly ball to right down the line. It's in the corner. If it's fair, it's going to leave the yard. That's a home run. A towering drive by Pete Crow Armstrong. The Cubs have taken 2 out of 3 here at Dodger Stadium, and the Cubs played some great baseball here all weekend long, Ron, at Dodger Stadium.
Look at me. Sure. Look at me.
We are back! That's we right. are back!
The Score Midday Show. Middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You could make the argument the Cubs never went away. They were down 0-2 out of the gate, but since then, they've been one of the best teams in baseball, 11-5 mark, with the most difficult schedule played. Another series win over the weekend. Maybe not avenging that 2-game sweep in Japan, but certainly making some noise on the West Coast. We'll see if they can continue that later on tonight. This is the Score Midday Show. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris hanging out. Layla Rahimi has the day off behind the glass. I'm looking at Ray Diaz, our executive producer. Also, Robbie Triano sorting out all of the sound and whatnot. And of course, you can not just hear us, but you can also see us as we are on twitch.tv/6Chicago670TheScore. Connor O'Donnell, Jenna Duddleston, Matt Anaya, also Brandon Fryer helping out as well. We're broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And Mark, what a weekend. Just from a viewing standpoint, getting to watch a bunch of teams do a bunch of different things. And of course, the individuals, they were playing on green grass and making it last.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was another one of those like dream weekends of sports, watching both of our baseball teams win series. That's right. The White Sox won a series as well. Rory McIlroy won for all of us. I mean, we were all on that nervous, awful at times ride with Rory. So yeah, it was a beautiful sports weekend. And it's funny, what you brought up the Cubs and taking 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers this weekend, and it's funny how the door has opened slightly. I know there's things going on with the Cubs that are bad, like Justin Steele, but even last night watching the game on ESPN, you heard the announcers talking about the Dodgers and saying, yeah, they're great, but you never know. And it's not necessarily just because of the Cubs. It's the Dodgers factor of you never know. And the Cubs took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers and did it in convincing fashion. They could have won Friday night if they would have bothered to score some runs. 16 runs on Saturday. And then just a real nice win last night over the Dodgers.
So the Dodgers started 8-0, right? And coming into that series with the Cubs, they were undefeated at home. But now after the Cubs take 2 out of 3, next thing I know, I look up,
they've lost 5 of their last 7. They've lost 6 of their last 9. And they look very vulnerable. Shohei Ohtani, 0-for-12 in the series. You can't write that kind of stuff up. But I thought, while the 16-0 win was impressive, that's the largest shutout the Dodgers have ever suffered at home. That was impressive, right? I liked yesterday's win even more. A 4-2 traditional win where you had to get Colin Ray, who was not all the way stretched out, give you some innings, and then your bullpen looked as good as maybe it has all season against that particular lineup and getting the 4-2 win.
Colin Ray started. They used 6 relievers, and then you're right. It was like perfect. The way the last 3 innings went is the way you drew it up, because you had Julian Merriweather, Porter Hodge, and then Ryan Presley. Again, yeah, you're right. A 2-run win, and Pete Crow Armstrong with 2 home runs, like just blasts of homers. And I ask you this question, Marshall Harris. Actually, I'm just asking this to the world at large.
Okay, anyone can chime in.
And to PCA. PCA, who are you? Who are you, sir? Are you a home run hitter? Are you a leadoff hitter? Are you a fast defensive guy? Are you a guy that's just going to hit a couple homers every once in a while and then you're going to go away? Who are you, sir? Other than really fast, a hell of a center fielder, and sometimes a really good hitter. Who are you, sir?
I have an answer to all those questions you just asked. Yeah. Yes. Wow. The answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
He's all, he's all the things that you just mentioned, because that's what he's shown us in his short time in the big leagues. And we're going to get into a little bit later about why I believe you pay him the $100 million contract right now.
Oh, you're up to $100 million. I saw $75
million. Yeah, you saw $75.
You just took it up to $100. You're like, hundo, okay.
If you can get him for $75, but I don't think you could ever gotten him for $75. That was just, hey, we're interested in talking. You notice those talks got tabled, right? You know why? Because they were for $75 million.
So you think PCA sat those down? PCA thinks he's going to be worth a lot more.
No, PCA's like most of us who work in industries where agents are involved.
Oh.
They let their agents handle all that.
Oh, but you know what?
They just play.
You know what I think about? There was a gentleman by the name of, I have to get the exact numbers on it. There's a gentleman by the name of Anthony Rizzo who signed a contract, probably, I think it was a $40 million deal in like 2014 or something like that. And probably a little regrettable on his part, because he probably got a lot more. But guess what? Anthony Rizzo was kind of middling at the time. He was a little like, he wasn't sure if he was going to be great or how this was going to go. So he said, give me the money, because Marshall, when somebody puts $75 million in front of you and you're a young player who's not proven himself, you take it. This guy's got balls, man. PCA, like, if he is the one that did table it, if this was all true, you know, it doesn't surprise me considering the swag that he has, and then he goes out and pops off last night.
Well, I think the important thing for him to understand is, why would he negotiate from a position of weakness, which is where his overall stats this season are? They're not the back half of last season. I think that's a different place to posture from. I think as an organization in modern times, you have to be able to project what this guy is going to cost you over the course of not only his initial rookie contract and his arbitration years, but beyond that. And as many years as you can tack on to that, that's where the getting is good. But like I said, we'll get deep into PCA a little later in the show, but let's go back to that bullpen you were talking about. Porter Hodge, we've got Ryan Presley. That's what an 8th and 9th inning looks like.
Where were those guys on your list, by the way?
Porter Hodge
was like very close to the top, right?
They were middling.
No, they were middling. Really?
Yeah, they were middling, because
Presley, yeah, I get that.
Presley was striking out people at a 6% rate. 6% of his
Merriweather was on your list, though,
right? Yeah, Merriweather was higher.
Highly thought
about. He had
about
one bad outing, and it was the most recent outing. I think what we have to do when we watch a bullpen, and I've done this many, many years, is we cannot fall victim to recency bias. And here's what I mean when I say that. Yes, you want to have a pitcher's best stuff. So if they pitched well the last time out, you're going to think they're dependable. You don't want to have a pitcher reeling, or is something wrong, or is mechanics off. And when they give up runs, the first thing you go to is you ask yourself, well, why are they giving up runs all of a sudden? And I think sometimes a bad outing is a bad outing. They've got to face major league hitters just like they're major league pitchers. And sometimes a major league pitcher, a good one, is going to get the best of you. Like I mentioned, Shohei Ohtani 0 for 12 in this series. When you have the likes of Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, those are just the MVPs we're talking about. And then there's other guys who play at an all-star level. And to get through this series winning 2 out of 3 games, I don't think how, as a Cubs fan, you can be upset with anything but the Justin Steele news. That's like the only thing you can be upset about right now is Justin Steele is down. We don't know how we're replacing him or if we have a good enough team to beat the Dodgers in a 7-game playoff. That's where the conversation needs to be.
Yeah, that's horrible news. Luckily, I put that in air quotes. It's early in the season, and you could figure out ways. I mean, this puts. I like the pressure that this puts on the front office. I like the pressure that this puts on Tom Ricketts to allow things to happen. But we'll get into all of that. Another guy that deserves a lot of credit from this entire weekend is Michael Busch. He had another blast last night where he pulled that thing. I mean, just no doubt about it, home runs at Dodger Stadium are a hard thing to pull off. He went oppo the day before. That's pretty hard to pull off as well, Michael Busch doing that. And then he had, I don't know if you saw Saturday that he had the grand slam. Maybe it was Friday. He had a grand slam taken away in center field, which was a hell of a play.
Well struck.
Yeah, well struck. Should have gone over the wall. So I'm sure that Michael Busch was feeling a certain way being back with the Dodgers because he came up in the Dodgers organization. So I'm sure he was. How about Justin Turner at one point driving in Michael Busch? So the two Dodgers doing damage to their old team.
You got to do what you got to do out here. And to your point about Michael Busch, the fact that he's batting .315, the OBP is .393, and just to round out his nice little slash line, a .593 slug, those are numbers that will keep you in the cleanup spot all season long. And while the debates both in here and externally are about, well, how can you pinch hit for your cleanup hitter, I think Craig Counsell, based on the way this team has played, and I want to point this out, only one team has played nearly as many games as the Cubs. That would be the Dodgers, because they started together, right?
Of course.
The Cubs have a worse record than the Dodgers by a half a game. They're right there. They're in the discussion. And the team with the best record in major leagues, the San Diego Padres, you already beat them 2 out of 3 at home. Now you got to see what you can do when they have their ace on the mound, Dylan Cease. He goes tonight for them. They're in a perfect situation for Craig Counsell to continue to pull the strings. And while we may not love every result, and we may not love how they lose games when they lose, the bottom line is you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And I was okay with getting through this first portion of the schedule through the end of the month of April at a 14-17 clip. They are exceeding that right now, and even though they don't have one of their best pitchers, arguably their best pitcher in Justin Steele, they're in a great position to continue doing the damage on this West Coast trip. And if they find a way to take 2 out of 3 against San Diego, everyone should just chill out for a minute.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at the schedule and just how daunting it is and how daunting it has been. Yeah, this is a 3-game series against the Padres, then home against Arizona, the Dodgers, and the Phillies. So I don't want to say you have to take 2 out of 3, but taking 2 out of 3 from the Padres would feel really good with just this gauntlet of a schedule. Here's another thing, too, about the Cubs. One of the things that I talked about a lot in the offseason is one of the ways the Cubs are going to not only win the division, but advance in the playoffs. Because right now I have a hard time seeing the Cubs advance in the playoffs, even before the Justin Steele injury, is you get guys that improve. Like, you have to, like, is Michael Busch, who did have a good year last year, but can he go up to another level? Can Dansby Swanson keep doing what he has been doing in terms of hitting the ball hard and getting back to maybe the way he was in the first half of his first contract, his only contract with the Cubs? You have to get some of that. And then you have to rely on, again, Craig Counsell to do his thing. And not only do his thing, but he's also tasked with developing a couple of players. Pete Crow Armstrong, who seems to have been his personal project since last year. So far, so good. Matt Shaw, another guy as well. So there's a lot of different spinning plates right now for Craig Counsell. But if you continue to get improvement from other players, that's one way that the Cubs might advance.
I think when you look at the lineup, right, and I know batting average, the emphasis is not put on it like it used to be when you're talking from a holistic standpoint, because on-base percentage matters. What you do when you hit the ball, slug, that matters as well. take Pete Crow Armstrong, for instance, 11 total bases because he had the two home runs, and then he had the triple too. Because you know, if the ball gets to the right field corner, that man ain't stopping a second.
It's over.
That's not what we do around here. they're excellent. I saw a rare base running mistake from the Cubs. I don't know if you saw it, Mark, but in Friday's game, Seiya Suzuki, they had a chance. Now, I want to point out, the only game they lost is probably against the odds-on favorite or one of the front runners to win Cy Young here in the early going. Because what we saw in that game, they had a runner on first. It was Seiya.
Yamamoto,
Yamamoto, and the ball gets hit into the outfield, and you're thinking there's going to be corners. Well, I guess Seiya thought he was going to get an RBI single, so he thought the ball was going home. It gets cut off. He gets hung up between first and second.
Right.
That kind of just deadens the inning.
Yeah.
And then
I actually thought, honestly, it's a base running error by Seiya Suzuki. I was surprised they didn't send, because with Kyle Tucker running, right?
Right.
I was surprised they didn't send Kyle Tucker on that play.
You know who else was surprised?
Who?
Seiya Suzuki.
Oh, did he say that?
No, I mean, his actions showed
it. Oh, absolutely. No. And I thought that was a mistake. Like, I thought that he shouldn't. Now, Seiya has to, as a veteran Major League Baseball player, I mean, that's 101 stuff. You got to be careful. However, I thought that they should have sent him there. I thought they should have scored a run.
Well, here's the bottom line. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, his splitter was absolutely devastating on Friday. He got 7 of his 11 swings and misses on the 30 splitters that he threw in that game.
Pouring in strikes.
6 scoreless, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. If you're going to lose a game in a series in which you win and that guy's on the mound, I'm not saying it's great, but it's like understandable. And I think that's the point. We're trying to get to a reasonable level of understandable when it comes to the Cubs dropping games. If they face an ace, so like if they lose a night and Dylan Cease is just on one, and they don't get enough runs, it's understandable because that's the creme de la creme, the top of the top. So for these other games, though, to your point, if they just win one of these three games, don't get swept, it's a 3-3 road trip against two of the best teams in Major League Baseball.
That's acceptable.
I'm just greedy, okay?
Yeah, no, you should be. By the way, the Friday game, you're right. Like, the story was Yamamoto because he was so good, and I would like to see how many strikes he threw. I mean, it was ridiculous. But guess who was really good, even though he gave up the Tommy Edmund 3-run blast? I loved watching Matthew Boyd. He was so good. Even the Edmund blast. Edmund had to go down and get it. Edmund's great. I mean, that's a great baseball player right there. And it's a 3-run homer. It's a 3-run homer. That goes on his watch. But Boyd was good. He was really good. And that, good God, do they need that now? Again, we've mentioned it now so many times with Steele out. It's the thing. With Steele out, you have to get these kind of performances, and you have to build that up with Matthew Boyd, which he has done so far so good. And what they did last night, you don't want to have Colin Ray and 6 relievers every time, but it's very interesting.
Well, certainly with the loss of Justin Steele, they'll need more of that Matthew Boyd. When he gave up the big 3-run homer, the beautiful thing is he pitched 6 innings, only gave up that 3-run homer. He only gave up 4 hits. He did walk 3, but he struck out 7. So like a good outing.
Yeah.
And that homer, it saw his ERA jump up to 1.59.
Yeah.
So he's still in good shape. As are the Cubs. Except for that whole, what are they going to do about the 5th spot in the rotation and their lack of pitching depth? Mm. That's something we have to discuss because yes, Justin Steele, he's not walking out of that tunnel this season. He's done for the year as he will have season-ending surgery. We will talk about what the Cubs should do to help supplant their now clear need as far as the rotation goes. That's when Score Middays returns. It's Mark Grody in, Layla Rahimi off today. I'm Marshall Harris, hanging out with you on 670 The Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Justin Steele's going to have surgery, repair the flexor tendon, address the UCL. He's out for the season and probably have better timetables after the surgery.
That was the news no one wanted to hear, but wasn't shocking after you hear about a guy talking about getting second opinions and whatnot. And yeah, Justin Steele out for the season as he will undergo surgery. No timetable on how long his recovery might be. As we welcome you back into Score Middays, Marshall Harris along with Mark Grody.
Hi.
Layla Rahimi has the day off. And when you heard the news, did you have like a visceral reaction to that?
Totally. Totally. I mean, out for the year, start your top pitcher, arguably. It's a devastating thing to hear. It's a devastating thing to see. And like you said, not shocking. I mean, when you get the second opinion, my thought was, and I talked to Bruce about this on Friday night on the show that I host, I said, that sounds like, when you want a second opinion, that sounds like a guy who was like, how can I avoid what has been happening to me now for two straight years? And typically, that involves doing something drastic, so while not surprised, yeah, it was, from a sports standpoint, it felt devastating, yeah.
Yeah, I think devastating is probably not the way I took it. I just took it as, this is another challenge now that Jed Hoyer has to figure out how he's going to navigate through, around, under, whatever you want to say it's going to be, because they're not going to have Justin Steele. And it became a matter of, can they solve this internally, or will they have to solve it externally? And I always believed that if they showed that they were in contention, they were going to go out and get a frontline arm, right? But now that matter seems to be somewhat expedited. I mean, you're expecting guy like Javier Assad to come back. Yep. Obviously, Colin Ray did his job in his first appearance.
Jordan Wicks, that's another guy.
Cade Horton has been mentioned. Mm-hmm. There are guys, but what do you think is the initial go-to? Because for me, Mark, honestly, I'm like, because you have the four off days over the next, I think, 12 days total, you can kind of figure out how to do your rotation without putting any extra strain on the pitchers that exist, including using Colin Ray as the fifth starter for now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to force Craig Counsell to be a little bit creative. And I'm thinking about it because there's a text at the top here, 312-644-6767. Dude, the Cubs don't lack pitching depth. Really, that, to some degree, that's true, but I'm thinking about quantity over quality. Yes, Javier Assad, very good. I don't know where they are with Assad with the injury. I'd slot him in right away if he was good to go, because Assad was very good last year for sure. We don't know about Jordan Wicks yet. So that's where I get into the quantity versus quality. We're not sure. He's been up and down, but that's a first-round pick for the Cubs, so you hope that there's a strong ceiling for him. There was a name brought up last night on the ESPN broadcast. I believe it was Buster Olney, as they looked for solutions for the Cubs. And the name that came up as a potential trade partner for the Cubs was the fine pitcher from the Miami Marlins, Kevin Alcantara, 29 years old, all-star, 19 and 22, as we know, the Cy Young in the year 2022. So I think those are the things that you have to start thinking about. Look at the bad teams in baseball, or teams that on which players don't have a future, and start to take advantage of those. Now, that hasn't separated itself yet, right? But
that's so sad the way you said that. No future. You basically made it sound like Sandy Alcantara pitches for the White Sox.
That's exactly right.
That's basically what you made it sound like.
I mean, there's like four or five teams like that in baseball where you could always just pick off of them and say, yeah, we'll take that guy, we'll take that guy. It's like your own little Rule 5 draft happening. But you'd obviously have to pay for somebody like that. And I was thinking, didn't he do damage against the Cubs? His first playoff win was, and people may not remember this because the pandemic messes people up, it was in 2020, the year in which the last time the Cubs went to the playoffs, Sandy Alcantara did a number on the Cubs in the playoffs, and I think it was in the first game of the series. So that would be nice to have that guy on the Cubs side as opposed to the Marlins side.
Are you speaking of September 30th?
Oh, you're good.
2020.
Oh, you're
good. A 5-1 Marlins win in which he went 6 2/3, gave up one run on three hits, walked three, struck out four. Is that the outing you're speaking
by
of?
The way, really quickly, because I can't keep, I knew I was going to do this.
What's up? What's
Thank
wrong?
You to the texters. Did I say Cubs Kevin Alcantara? Sandy Alcantara. I am sorry.
Yeah.
But I was thinking in my head, you know why I was thinking, like, I conflated that? Because, hey, we'll trade our Alcantara for your Alcantara. That's not inconceivable, by the way.
It's not inconceivable as far as what gets moved for a frontline pitcher. I said Sandy right behind you because I heard you say it, and I was like, that's okay. We'll keep it moving.
Yeah, good job. Good job. All right, but good for you on that. Let me – okay, so you nailed that, the 5-1 win. Can I raise the stakes for you in that game? You know who hit the big three-run homer in that game and against whom?
It wasn't Tommy Edman.
It was not Tommy Edman. It was Corey Dickerson, a three-run blast off of Kyle Hendricks. That was the big blast in that game in which Sandy of the Alcantaras pitched in.
Yeah, and Sandy's been good for quite some time. And as you said, no future with the Marlins because they're not going to pay you long term.
Right, right.
I think that's the biggest thing. Now, Sandy's 29 years old. He's been doing this for a minute. Do you feel like now is the time, though, for that? I think you just got to roll with what you have.
Yeah, well, no, eventually, look, if you want to win in the play, like, if you're just comfortable winning the division, then rolling the dice in the postseason, fine. Like, if you're going to go with anything can happen in the postseason and all that stuff, that's fine. But if you really are serious about winning in the playoffs, sorry, it's too much quantity over quality right now. Like, you take Justin Steele off that staff.
Yeah, the quality
goes down.
Who's
your sure thing right now? There's one sure pitcher out there. Shota Imanaga. I'm sorry. It's not Jameson Taillon. Maybe Matthew Boyd. I mean, I've been impressed with Matthew Boyd so far. But these are all guys. There's none of these guys that are in the Cubs starting staff except for Steele and Shota. Can you say, oh, yeah, I feel really good that guy. Do you feel good when Jameson Taillon goes out there? I don't a lot of the time.
I feel like you might not know in a kind of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde way what exactly you're getting. That is until he gets into a groove. Every season he seems to have this span of games where he gets into a groove, and he does look lights out. And you understand why the Cubs acquired him. But it's been too inconsistent over the long haul for you to be like, I think that's our guy for the rest of the season that can fill the role of a number two starter.
That's the entire Cubs starting staff, even the depth pieces. Like I said, with Jordan Wicks, when Jordan Wicks goes out there and starts, how do you feel? I feel like, let's see what happens today. That's how I feel. Assad, I feel pretty good about for the most part. You know, I feel like when he goes out there, I'm like, this guy is interesting the way he pitches.
But when he goes out there part is carrying a lot of weight there because he hasn't pitched yet. So
100%. And we know nothing about Cade Horton, like what he may or may not be. Do you trust a guy like that? That in a season in which you're supposed to win the division and get to the playoffs, you have to trade for somebody. Absolutely.
So to your point, Cade Horton, he's made a couple of starts for the Iowa Cubs, pitched 7 1/3, so he's not going deep into games yet. Giving up 4 hits, 1 run, so those are good numbers. He's walked 7. It's the walks that kill me with both Horton and Wicks. He's walked 7 guys in 7 1/3. Well, he has struck out 12 over the same step.
Talking about Wicks.
I'm talking about Cade Horton.
Oh, okay.
Cade Horton specifically. He's got a 1.23 ERA, but he really hasn't done anything. He's made 2 starts, and he hasn't pitched more than 4 innings in any of his starts. Meanwhile, on the other hand, you have Jordan Wicks, who has been shaky. He's given up 11 hits over 9 2/3 inning in his 2 starts. He's given up 5 runs. He's only struck out 6, and he's walked 6 as well. So the whip is way up. High whip makes me nervous. We talked about that with the bullpen reliever rankings, right? That's the trust.
That's your statistic for pitchers, isn't it? I've noticed that. Am I right about that?
I think more so for relief pitchers than anybody else, because you get into a game, and if your whip's out here over, 1.2, I'm just concerned. Why are you always putting people on base?
Yeah.
You're in because it's a tight game, and if you're in a high-leverage situation, putting a guy on base versus not, specifically through the walk, is very telling of how your outings go, how smooth they can be and how erratic they can be. And you can't afford to have consistent errors in terms of balls and strikes from your relievers. That's why, going back to yesterday's game, it was so calming, soothing to see what the relievers did on the back end of that game, specifically with Ryan Pressly, more so than Porter Hodge.
Yeah.
Because Hodge is above Pressly in those rankings.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You got to keep your rankings real, man. And Merriweather was good, too. It's so nice to have Julian Merriweather here just because he was out all year last year, and I was excited when they signed him a couple of years ago. So, I mean, that's one of those guys. That's one of those guys where you look at and say, if you get something out of that guy, then you are better in that position. And that's what the Cubs need. Guys that were here last year, they needed to perform better than they did.
So the question becomes, when you look at this Cubs team coming off of winning 2 out of 3 at Los Angeles, now facing a team that comes into tonight's game with the best record in all of baseball in the San Diego Padres, 13-3, knowing without seeing you, they'd only have 1 loss all season because the Cubs gave them 2 out of those 3 losses.
That's right.
What are you most concerned about heading into this series? Because from a big picture standpoint, you know you don't have Justin Steele. You know they're throwing Dylan Cease, who you didn't have to see in that first 3-game set.
Ding, 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 ding.
For me, it's seeing PCA wake up to the way that he did with that big game last night. It's like, can you carry that over? Can the offense continue to just drill up the runs like they did the first meeting with the Padres?
I love that you brought up the PCA, because that is one of the things. Because as excited as I was about the two homers he had last night, I started the show by saying, who are you, man? Are you going to keep this up? Are you, like, he doesn't have to do that. I don't need PCA to hit 30 home runs. I just need consistency at the plate. And he swings at everything, man. Everything.
Yeah, yeah. And on top of that, if he hit 30 home runs, you wouldn't complain.
If he hits 30 home runs, he's going well over your little 100 million mark.
Again, Marshall Harris, Mark Grody here on Score Middays, talking Cubs with you. And what we're most concerned about as we head into this next of the gauntlet, if you will, that takes us through the end of April. Again, the Padres are very good. Dylan Cease will be on the mound. It'll be the first time the Cubs have seen them. Even watching, and this is why I give Craig Counsell some credit here. They're 11-7. They're over 500. They're playing the toughest schedule out of the gate. And guys are struggling. Like a Matt Shaw is not, he was 1-for-4 in yesterday's game, but he hasn't shown up as the guy that looks like he's going to bust through and win Rookie of the Year. He's batting 160. His on base is 300 because everybody on that team walks, but he slugs 240. And seeing that and understanding that even without premium performances from some of these younger guys, they're doing enough to get the job done.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. So far, they are four games over 500 now? Where are they?
Yeah, 11-7.
11-7.
First place in the Central, which is important.
Well, and you asked, like, what am I most concerned about? The Dylan Cease factor, that's it right there. I mean, that's the big part. Going up against these harsh starting pitchers, and you brought it up earlier, sometimes you're going to lose to these guys, but guess what? If you are to be a good team, a division-winning team, a playoff team, it kind of starts with beating those guys, because you're going to get nothing but that kind of guy if you do get to the postseason. I know it's very early to think about that, but that is truth.
Yeah, and it is, let's be clear, it's very early. We're at the 18-game mark in a 162-game schedule. That's not a high percent. Just over 10% of the games have been played. So I think just acknowledging that the Cubs are doing their thing, their run differential plus 43, helped by two factors. Oh, you got to visit Sacramento earlier this year. Two, you put up a 16 spot on the reigning world champions. But that plus 43 looms large because it shows that the Cubs can score runs. I just want to see if the relief can continue to be what we saw, which was prototypical on Sunday, and if some of these other players can get things going. You talked about Dansby Swanson in particular. He's looked good at times this year. Had a solid glove. They're playing as well as anyone in baseball when you look up and down the standings. You know, no one in the American League has 10 wins.
Really?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of 9-7s and 8-7s and 8-9s and 8-8s. It's just a bunch of, you know, teams running in the middle of the pack. But that's the whole thing. Meanwhile, in the National League, the Mets are off to a 10-5 start. The Phillies are 9-6. The Cubs, as we mentioned, 11-7. And in the West, there's three teams already with double-digit wins: the 13-3 Padres, the 11-4 Giants, the 11-6 Los Angeles Dodgers. And don't forget, the Diamondbacks are sniffing right there at 9-7. Now the Rockies are there to just be rolled by whoever, whenever, anyone, and everyone.
Right.
But it's going to be interesting to see what they actually do end up with out of this April.
Well, and then there's another name that we haven't brought up in this Cubs starting staff that I wonder about, because he's the ultimate hybrid, Ben Brown, who pitched very well in the 16-0 game. But there was that game, by the way, that game was on the line for a while. That's the ironic part about it. I actually, that night, I was able to watch about five innings or so, and I'm like, it's still scoreless. I'm like, all right, I'm going to bed, hit the DVR, wake up, and then look at my phone, 16-0. I love sports days like that, where you go to bed thinking like nothing good's necessarily going to happen. You wake up, and it's completely the opposite. But Ben Brown pitched well in that one. That's where you had the Bush opposite field home run. But Ben Brown's another guy, even though just the two pitches they make such a big deal about. But he's interesting, man, because I thought he was going to be like just a stud bullpen guy. I'm starting to change my mind on that.
So Ben Brown, 6 shutout innings, easily his best performance of the year. He left the game. It was 2-0. The Cubs then scored 14 more runs. End of story. Ben Brown looking good. We'll see what he does his next time out as well. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to head to Augusta. The Remnants. We'll quiet our voices a little and talk about all the noise that was being made because you're not allowed to have your phone out, so you have to find out what's going on by just looking up at the big leaderboard. Yeah. And Rory McIlroy, somehow, some way, had the lead, gave it up, got it back, and won in a playoff. We will discuss on the other side. It's Score Middays. Marshall Harris, Mark Grody, Layla Rahimi has the day off.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
One look. Rory back and through. And he's made it! He's done it! It's a grand slam roar at Augusta National. Rory McIlroy on his knees. Bent down in emotion, clutching his head. He's won the Masters. He's won all the Grand Slam events. He's the sixth in the history of the game to enter golf's greatest group.
Worthy of the call there by Mike Tirico on Sirius XM. Rory McIlroy completing the career Grand Slam. Just needed about a decade-plus break before he could get things wrapped up, if you will, because it had been a minute going back to 2014, the last time he had won a major. As we're back with you here on Score Middays, Marshall Harris, Mark Grody, and Mark, that was one of the most exhilarating roller coaster rides I think I've ever been on as a golf viewer, watching everything that happened on the back nine. This man had a 6-shot lead with 8 holes to go and blew it.
Mm-hmm.
But then got the playoff win.
It was unbelievable. I mean, like, did you watch Saturday? Because Saturday was unbelievable. Like, just all the shots that were being made. He, on his first hole on Saturday, Rory blasts it over the sand trap, which they were like, oh my God, how did he do that? You're taking the risk. Then on Sunday, just symbolic of what happened to him, he tries it again.
Uh-huh.
Plops in the sand, and we're off to the races, ladies and gentlemen. First two holes were horrible. The double bogey on 13.
That's when I was like, wait, is this really happening?
Oh, is this really happening?
But then you realize over the last 10 years, that's what has happened.
That is what has happened. And man, like, and the announcers were like playing right along with it. Every single person was just ridiculously nervous for Rory. Then he makes the great shot on 15 where he shoots it between the trees, over the water, onto the green, and to within position. It just, like, the highs and lows. That's what it is. I don't know if I've ever really watched a sporting event of that length with that many highs and lows emotionally in rooting for one guy and being against the other guy. I didn't feel good about that because Justin Rose seems like a splendid gentleman. He really does. And he played very well and stayed in it. But I was like, back off, nice guy. We don't need you as a part of this. This is Rory's time right now.
I think there was a collective, unless you had a significant rooting interest in a particular golfer, whether that's your favorite golfer or maybe wager was a factory, oh, the wagertainment angle, if you will.
I'm so glad I didn't have any money whatsoever on that because that had to have been painful for you gamblers.
This is why I don't do the brackets for March Madness. I want to just enjoy the madness that is March Madness.
Wow, you don't do brackets?
No, I
really don't either, but I'm surprised to hear that about you.
What's crazy is, so Justin Rose, right? Remember the 65 way back on day one?
Oh, yeah.
So he follows that up with a 71 on Friday. Then on Saturday, he shoots a 75, and you're thinking, okay, well, you know, he did what he does. That's what he does.
Uh-huh.
He comes out strong and then fades away. This man shot a 66 in the final round to get right back to, I'm in this. It's going to take extra golf for us to decide a winner. And Rory McIlroy, his scorecard is all over the place.
Unbelievable.
And as you're watching, it's like, wait, he got a double bogey, but yet he's still getting birdies, but he's also got bogeys. I think... What was crazy about it for me is that I thought Bryson DeChambeau was going to give him a better run. And he ends up shooting a 75 on the last day. I was more surprised about the DeChambeau fall off than I was the Justin Rose charge.
Big time, man. DeChambeau, like, as somebody, like everybody, most people anyway, I was rooting for Rory, and DeChambeau was the guy that scared me the most. I mean, just because of the pressure that he was putting on. And it seemed like yesterday when they both walked out there, just felt like DeChambeau was more comfortable, more relaxed. And I'm not even before they even took a shot, and then boom, Rory with two bad shots or two bad holes, I should say, to get things going. But yeah, I was very surprised about DeChambeau that he was not in it at the end, and he basically choked that thing away himself.
No, he choked it away quickly. He took the lead after two holes after he had the birdie, and he's like, "Let me hit you with back to back bogeys to make sure that I'm not really in the mix." And then it was just kind of ho hum till the back nine, and he tried to make some noise, but just did not have it. The bogey on 17 was kind of the, okay, you're not going to be involved in anything going forward. But congratulations to Rory McIlroy. And I think this is important that golf has its stars and that the stars have their star moments. This is going to be weird. I always equate the PGA to WWE, because in WWE, you can be a superstar and then go into kind of back page and then come back and be the guy. And I feel like Rory McIlroy, he never really went back page per se, but going that long without a major, Knowing you need just one more major to complete the Grand Slam, clearly this was worth the wait for him. You saw how emotional he was.
Oh, my God.
Afterwards, the whole thing was super interesting to me. And I know it was not interesting to Joe Ostrowski, because listen to what he said heading into Friday about one Rory McIlroy.
Rory McIlroy was somebody, of course, we kept an eye on, but after what happened yesterday, that might be a tough one as well.
It just feels like it's in his head. And it feels like most golf fans want this to happen. They're trying to will it to happen. But then he had those two double bogeys late yesterday. I think he'll have a fine tournament. As far as winning it, though, no. And you're never going to get value on Rory. Like, he's 14-1 last I checked, and it probably should be a lot higher. But, yeah, I mean, when it comes to catching Scheffler, I don't see it this time from Rory. And you're talking to someone that thought that he had a really good shot at winning.
Oh, no!
I can't believe it!
That's our guy, Joe.
Why you guys want to do Joe like that?
No,
I'm my just, God. Joe's never coming on this show again.
No, it's a reference point. We appreciate Joe and his expert knowledge, but the 14-1, I guess it was about right, huh?
Is that expert knowledge?
See, now you're trolling. You're doing the Grody troll thing, which I appreciate. I'm not a troll. I have graduated. I am what they call a provocateur.
Oh, a provocateur.
So it's a different level.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, what would it take for me to get to provocateur?
Got to be a little more subtle with it.
Oh, okay.
The shade's got to be a little more subtle.
Yeah, subtlety's not my greatest trait.
You come in like whatever the character's name was on...
I come in like a... What's the
wrecking ball?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. So I told you I was a little foggy today.
It's okay. But you know the cloud that follows the kid around in Peanuts.
Oh yeah.
That's you.
Oh
me, I'm like a little sprinkle here, a little sprinkle there.
I'm not Pigpen. You just called me Pigpen.
Oh, is that Pigpen?
Yeah, that's Pigpen, right? The cloud over with the dirt and the whatnot.
It's the worst character in Snoopy.
It's the worst. No. That's the worst cartoon character ever.
It's just mean. It's like, yeah, he's always dirty and smelly.
You're going to be the stinky kid.
No, I didn't mean to say. I just meant the cloud.
I'm Pigpen.
No, my bad. My bad, Martin.
The cloud is like the Zoloft commercials.
Listen, we're behind closed
doors
here. I have a
cloud over me for Zoloft.
I'll say this. We're behind closed doors. There's no smell in here. It smells delightful. In here, there's no Pigpen action in here.
Are you saying I'm fat? What's going on?
No, I'm
stinky. I have bad breath.
I used
AIM today.
I think you're phenomenal. I think Rory's performance at the Masters was phenomenal, and I really forgot about Tiger Woods for a day, because watching that, I was thinking about the guys who were actually on the course and not who wasn't there. And I think that is the biggest key. You know who is going to be here with us in just a moment? Ryan Dempster, former pitcher, Marquee Sports Network. The analyst joins us to talk about the Cubs and their great trip so far on the West Coast. That's when Score Middays returns. It's Marshall Harris, Mark Grody on 670 The Score.